Visiting the Lake. Since we parted, she had grown so womanly, so wise, this child of tender years, that it was a joy to speak to her. As we talked, she asked me if I had seen the lake, and I echoed, "Is there a lake here?" "Certainly," she said, with a little pardonable pride that she should know more of the heavenly surroundings than I. And so we turned in the direction of the lake, and passing through ever-varying landscape, we finally came upon it. I caught my breath, then stopped abruptly and covered my face with my hands to shield my eyes from the glorified scene. I looked upon it as one but half awakened. Before us spread a lake as smooth as glass, but flooded with the golden glory caught from the very heavens that made it look like a sea of molten gold. The blossom and fruit-bearing trees grew to its very border. Far, far away across its shining waters arose the domes and spires of what seemed to be a mighty city. Many people were resting upon its flowery banks, and on the surface of the water were boats of wonderful structure, filled with happy souls and propelled by unseen powers. Above we saw a band of singing cherubs floating high overhead. "Glory and honor," sang the child voices. "Dominion and power," caught up and answered the voices of the multitudes below. "Be unto him who sitteth upon the throne, and to the Lamb forever." We stood upon the margin of the lake. My cheeks were tear-bedewed, and my eyes were dim with emotion. I felt weak as a little child, but oh, what rapture, what joy unspeakable filled and overmastered me. Was I dreaming, or was it indeed but another phase of the immortal life? As we watched, groups of children played around in joyous freedom, and there were happy shouts of laughter that echoed over the lake. No fear of harm or danger, no dread of ill, or anxiety lest a mishap occur. Security and joy and peace. "This is a blessed life," I said, as we stood watching the sports of the happy children. I often think how we were taught to believe that heaven was where we would wear crowns of gold, and stand with harps always in our hands. Our crowns of gold are the halos his blessed presence casts about us, and we do not need harps to accentuate our songs of praise. We do see the crowns and hear the angelic harps when and as God wills it, but our best worship is to do his blessed will, said May as we turned to go. As we walked, she told me of the history of her years in heaven, her duties, her joys, her friends, her home. I found her home was quite distant from our own, far from the spires of the great city across the lake. But she added, "What is distance in heaven? We come and go at will. We feel no fatigue, no haste, experience no delays. It is blessed, blessed." Not far from our home we saw a group of children playing upon the grass, and in their midst was a beautiful great dog, over which they were rolling and tumbling with the greatest freedom. As we approached, he broke away from them and came bounding to meet us, and crouched and fawned at my very feet with every gesture of glad welcome. "Do you not know him, Auntie?" May asked brightly. "It is dear old Sport," I cried, stooping and placing my arms about his neck and resting my head on his silken hair. He responded to my caresses with every expression of delight, and May laughed aloud at our mutual joy. "I have often wondered if I should not some day find him here. He surely deserves a happy life for his faithfulness and devotion in the other life. His intelligence and his fidelity were far above those of many human beings whom we count immortal." "Did he not sacrifice his life for little Will?" "Yes, he attempted to cross the track in front of an approaching train, because he saw it would pass between him and his little master, and feared the boy was in danger. It cost his life. He always placed himself between any of us and threatened danger, but Will he seemed to consider his special charge. He was a gallant fellow. He deserves immortality." "Dear, dear old Sport, you shall never leave me again," I said, caressing him fondly. At this he sprang to his feet, barking joyously, and gambolled and frolicked before us the rest of the way home, then lay down upon the doorstep, with an upward glance and a wag of his bushy tail, as though to say, "See how I take you at your word?" "He understands every word we say," said May. How silken and beautiful his long hair is. He has his bath in the river every day, and it leaves its mark on him also. Do you know, I think one of the sweetest proofs we have of the Father's loving care for us is that we so often find in this life the things which gave us great happiness below. The more unexpected this is, the greater joy it brings. I remember once seeing a beautiful little girl enter heaven, the very first to come of a large and affectionate family. I afterward learned that the sorrowful cry of her mother was, "Oh, if only we had someone there to meet her, to care for her." She came, lovingly nestled in the Master's own arms, and a little later, as he sat, still caressing and talking to her, a remarkably fine Angora kitten, of which the child had been very fond, and which had sickened and died some weeks before, to her great sorrow, came running across the grass and sprang directly into her arms, where it lay contentedly. Such a glad cry as she recognized her little favorite, such a hugging and kissing as that kitten received, made joy even in heaven. Who but our loving Father would have thought of such comfort for a little child? She had evidently been a timid child, but now, as the children gathered about her with the delightful freedom they always manifest in the presence of the beloved Master, she, looking up confidingly into the tender eyes above her, began to shyly tell of the marvelous intelligence of her little pet, until at last Jesus left her contentedly playing among the flowers with the little companions who had gathered about her. Our Father never forgets us, but provides pleasures and comforts for us all, according to our individual needs. Then we parted, each to the duties of the hour.